Resonance 104.4 FM. My name's Jack Thurston, and this is a special Bike Week edition of The Bike Show. We're going to be here for the next hour and a half, going to Bike Fest in the square. Joining me in the studio is Barry Mason from Southwark Cyclists. Welcome, Barry.
Good afternoon.
We're going to be revisiting some of the highlights of the last 6 months on The Bike Show. So we've got interviews on wheels with Jeremy Deller. We've got a ride up Ditchling Beacon. We're going to have a Tour de France preview. And we've got a preview of the Dunwich Dynamo. And we've got a ride with Rosie Wolford, if we've got time. Yesterday was the set-piece event in Bike Fest, in Bike Week, which is Bike Fest in Trafalgar Square. And I went down and had a look around and spoke to quite a few people down there. And I started off by checking out the breakdancing demonstration. So we're at Bike Fest. We've just seen the best breakdancing in London town. Why are you here?
We're actually on tour right now, Hip Hop Collective, by way of Independence, who is our production company slash management. We just got invited to do Bike Fest 2005. And we came out and gave the people a show.
Representing Puma.
Yeah. And Vex Clothing.
And it doesn't sound like you're from London.
No, we're actually, four of us are from America, Philadelphia. One from Sweden, a female from Sweden, male from France, and another female from London.
And so what do you think about all this activity about bicycles? I mean, you're on bicycles.
Yeah, I rode the bike here from Clapham Common to Trafalgar Square, and it was a nice little ride. I love bikes. I remember when I couldn't ride a bike and I felt stupid because I couldn't. But it's good training, good discipline and balance, you know. And it's like a couple of tents here say, it's very healthy. It's good for you. It's better than walking, not quite as hard on you as running. So.
And how about incorporating the use of bicycles into breakdancing? Is that like something for the 21st century?
We can probably do it with the proper training, because that's how anything is. You train right and you can do it, you know. So if we got the proper training on trick bikes, we could probably do it on mountain bikes too. But
so that's like BMX bikes.
Yeah, trick bikes, BMX bikes. Yeah, I mean to pick up braking is difficult in its own, so I'm sure we could pick up anything else because we have the discipline in our heads already. So.
Yeah, it's already kind of, you know, already taken effect. It's been since the 80s, you know. The freestylers, they do all those tricks. To us, that's breaking on bikes, you know. All those spins, wrapping the bike around, you know, all that balance. That's breaking on bikes.
And do you notice any difference in bicycling in the UK compared to in America?
Not really. Yeah.
Y'all protected a lot more.
Yeah.
We don't wear pads anymore.
Yeah, y'all actually ride in the street. We kind of ride on the sidewalk.
Where we feel like riding.
Yeah, where we feel like riding. As far as the BMX, I don't see it as much. Since we're from Philadelphia, there's a park in Philadelphia called Love Park, and a lot of bicycles go there. There's a lot of skate parks and bike parks. I don't know how where the spots are out here, but I would like to see the BMX competitions also.
And so where else are you going on your tour?
We're going to, we're going to Ludlow, Slough, Froome. Going to a lot of places. I can't remember everyone, but we've been in a lot of places.
And you enjoying yourself in London?
I live in London.
Oh, you live in London?
Yeah, I live in London since 2 years back, so yeah.
How did you hook up with these guys from Philadelphia?
I met them in a club, and ever since that I've been dancing with them. So
where are the best places to see breakdancing in London?
The best places? Well, there's a night called Thursday Night Throwdown, which is on every first Thursday of the month, and it's in Brixton.
Plan B.
Yeah, Plan B. It's a wicked place. It's my friends that are organizing it, and it's really, really good. As well as Funky P with DJ Hooch. He's organizing every Saturday in Angel. So there's loads of places where there's a lot of B-boys. And Sue Bar on Wednesdays, a lot of B-boys. So there's loads of places where you can see good breaking.
And is there any crossover between breaking and cycling?
This is the first time, so it was interesting to see if it worked.
So what is it going to take to make biking dope?
I don't know. I mean, keep on, you know, developing bikes, you know, these low riders and, you know, these little BMXs, because those ones are kind of hot. I like those bikes. And I think a lot of young people get, you know, interested in riding when they see, like, nicer bikes, really.
We'll be demonstrating through a mechanical process of transfer from the cycle mechanism at the back to various apparatus here at the front. We will reveal the answer to everything.
Yay! What kind of bike is this?
It's a folding bike, and it's got six gears. Just sort of imported from China, and we're just trying to promote sort of or providing a cheaper version compared to the folding bikes in England at the moment, because you know some of them retail about £600, whereas this is like a fraction of the price, and we're just sort of trying to test the market and try and get some sort of, you know, good sort of vibe around it. So we've got a lot of feedback today, so this is probably one of our like sort of strongest events. You know, we're getting tourists, we're getting Londoners, and everybody's sort of just...
So how many of the bikes have you had made, or is this a prototype?
No, this is actually, we're selling these. We've sold about 100 of these already.
Oh, right.
And so like, we're doing it through eBay and through advertising means and things like that, and this will probably just give us like even more exposure.
And so how does it manage to be a quarter of the price of like a Brompton or something like that?
Well, it's managed to do that because we've kept the cost really, really low, you know, just because most things are being manufactured in China, and we've got a factory in China which is sort of helping us do that. And whilst most of the bikes in England are actually doing it in sort of getting, you know, bits of the frames manufactured in China and Taiwan as well, so
that's how does it match up in terms of quality?
The quality is just as good, but the only one disadvantage is probably it doesn't fold as compact and as well engineered as compared to a British Brompton bicycle. But I mean, it's good for just sort of chucking it, you know, in the caravan or in the car, so, yeah, just to keep it safe.
And how light is it?
It's 9 kg.
And so it folds down. We've got one, there's a folded down one over here. Yep. Is that the maximum it folds down? That's pretty small.
It is small, and it's light, and it comes with a bag, so it's like, you know, a bike in a bag.
And you've got all this origami around as well. What's the idea with that?
We're just trying to sort of get some sort of, you know, some interest going about, you know, sort of the art of folding and the art of folding in a bike as well. So we're trying to sort of generate interest with like children, kids, and sort of like hopefully, you know, commuters, so that, you know, just for environmentally friendly, we're trying to get, you know, people more involved with.
So you can take one of these bikes on a train.
Yeah, you can.
And then
yeah, because you can't take a full bicycle on a train because it's not permitted on certain undergrounds or overground or railways or anything.
So can you take this on the tube?
Yeah, you can, and on the bus as well. If you fold it and put it in a bag.
And how long does it take to fold up?
20 seconds, not long. It's only got two main folds, the handlebar and the mainframe.
And it's got back suspension?
Rear suspension, and it's got six gears.
And a nice rack on the back?
Little bag rack, yeah.
Brilliant. And what's it called, and how do people find out about it?
The company is called UK8. You can ring us up directly, and we can just sort of organise something. Number's 0207-734-8542. We're based in London and we do offer sort of a delivery service as well.
And you've got a website?
Not currently. It's under construction at the moment, so trying to get everything sorted at the same time.
And it's got, and what's it called? It's called the Shima.
Shima bike, yeah.
All right, well, look out for it.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I'm with Rose Adders, who is the chef de Bike Fest. How are you feeling?
Great. Slightly indigestible.
A lot of preparation has gone into today.
Yes, that is certainly the case. A lot of people have put a lot of thought and time into it, but it's the idea is that it's a very free-flowing, sort of fluid event, and that you can pick and mix, take what you want, and just get a glimmer of how exciting it is to cycle in the centre of London and what cycling brings to the centre of the city. And also, in a small way, what Transport for London is doing for cycling in London.
Well, let's take a little wander around and some of your particular favourite spots at Bikefest.
What I really like is things like the postcards, the Art for All. We'll just go over there. There's a lot of stuff here today so that kids can paint their idea of cycling in London. And this is one of the things about that. So you've got a postcard which shows Trafalgar Square with bikes all over it, and then you colour it in and you take it home and you send it to someone and you say you wish you were here like I was. And then there's a similar lot with a mural across the other side where you can paint on you and your mates and a tree and a bicycle and all that sort of thing. That these are all quite new from last year. We've also, I'm very pleased that we've got the St John's Ambulance bike teams as well as the London Ambulance bike team showing off their very fancy smart bikes, and also the police bike patrol teams. And then over here is St Martin's School of Art, who've been sorting out bike theft and understanding. They're going to start investigating the criminal mind in relation to bike theft.
And we're part of a initiative called Design Against Crime, and we're here to raise awareness of the usage of Sheffield stands. And Sheffield stands are the very common U-shaped cycle stands. And what we're trying to do is get people to understand how their bikes could potentially be stolen by if they're not locking their bikes up properly. So as you can see from the bicycle, the front here, with only the front wheel has been locked up. And a very common sight in London is a chain and a front wheel left where the
orphan front wheel.
Yeah, where the wheel has been undone and the rest of the bike has been taken. So just one technique that's been used, but I think that's a very sort of common one.
And so how are you coming at this from a design point of view? I mean, what's the connection with St Martin's?
Okay, well, we've got a website called bikeoff.org, and it's what we're trying to do is invite people to go on there and leave comments of their experiences of parking solutions in London, and then use that evidence to feed possible new parking solutions that we're going to design and test.
Right, so how long has the project been going for?
It's been going for about 6 months so far.
And any early findings on what might work better than what we've got already?
So far, we understand that Sheffield stands are liked by cycle users, but it's there are issues.
There is a tremendous variety of bike security fixings, and some of them seem to be really over-engineered.
Totally over-engineered, and I think the problem with at the moment is you have to carry a lock that's heavier than your bike to keep it safe. But we're tackling that issue with some solutions.
So which are the best locks?
I couldn't comment on that.
Type of lock? Do you think those the D locks are good, or those big chains that people wear around their waists?
I think it's a combination of locking devices. I think if you were to just have two D locks, a D lock can be broken using one particular technique, but if you have a combination, then you increase the time to be able to steal a bike, so therefore I think it's probably safe.
And not have a very expensive bike is another good anti-theft device, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I think by defacing your bike, you might reduce the resale value of the bike as well. So,
well, thanks very much.
No problem.
Yeah, I was just thinking, while you were talking, the whole thing with locks and parking, that as well as putting two locks on, you can actually find out better D-locks, and they are more expensive, but there's a website, Sold Secure, that has gold, silver and bronze grading of locks. And really, if you don't have a gold lock, it's hopeless, because it's very easy to break D-locks. But Sold Secure have done a lot of attack resistance on locks.
Well, I've come across three people here with the most beautiful bikes, I think. They're probably the most beautiful bikes at Bikefest today. Tell me about your bike.
My bike is Marcian. I just got it, and it's custom-made, and it took half a year for them to build it. So it's just arrived, and we are very pleased to have it. But
talk me through it. It's a steel frame.
Is it truck bike? It's truck bike. It's fixed geared. I don't know.
So you've got one gear, and you have to keep pedaling.
Yes. It's fixed gear, so you have to keep pedaling, and if you caught, you can't coast.
No. And has it got brakes?
Yes, one brake.
One brake on the front. And you've got a beautiful red leather saddle.
Yes, that's Brooks Saddles. I love it. It's nice.
And how comfortable is it?
It's really comfortable. It makes it a while to get used to it, but still, it's actually much softer than sporty one like that you can get.
And so, what are you going to use this bike for? Cycling around town or going on long trips?
And yes, going for a long trip. I have a town ride bike as well, which is also very nice. So.
And how much do you ride every week?
Every day. I mean, how long?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Never count.
1 hour? More?
Per day?
More than 1 hour?
Per day?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least 1 hour, I guess. Yeah.
And this one is another Mercian.
It's Mercian Super Big Lady frame, made to my specification, so it's custom made.
And what did you, how did you design the specification? What was important to you?
It just basically, I just wanted a bike that fits me perfectly. So we went.
So they measured your body.
Yeah, and they put us on the jig, and then they measured, and. Yeah, and then I specify the color combinations and the this rubber ball thing.
And you ride it every day?
I ride another bike most of the time. This is my good weather bike. I sometimes ride to like Richmond Park or towards north. To like Epping Forest and stuff.
And it's a real retro kind of styling, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like the real 50s, 60s era.
Yeah, it's like, actually more like 70s, I think. All the parts are from 60s and 70s, most of the parts, except tires and rims are more modern. But yeah.
And so if someone wanted to buy a bike like this, what kind of price did they have to pay? Because this really is a very beautiful bike.
Around £1,000.
But it's a bike for life.
Yeah.
And it's a lot cheaper than a car.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it costs probably as much as 1 year insurance and fuel cost. So, yeah, it's a good investment.
Well, those were some of the people and sounds down at Bike Fest in the square yesterday. Barry, you saw those two Mercian bikes, didn't you?
I did. They were beautiful bikes. They were so skinny, there's nothing to them. They were fabulous little things.
I mean, they're a track bike,
yeah,
which is a bike that originated from racing at velodromes, but it's more and more popular on the streets in cities, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the first ones appeared about 5 or 10 years ago in London. The couriers started a lot of these trends. And more people are riding them. They're just so skinny, so simple, nothing can go wrong. And I think they look very stylish too.
And do you ride a fixed gear bike at all?
No, I don't, but I'm really tempted to start. I do ride one when I go on the track, so I know how to ride the things.
The place to ride them really is down on the track. And London's only track is down at Herne Hill, and it's closed. We had a little feature on it a few weeks ago. Can you tell us what the latest situation is down there?
Yeah, lots of false starts, and it's closed all summer, and that's a real pain. It's a huge track. It's the last vestige of the 1948 Olympics, I guess, and before that, built in about 1900. A lot of people in South East London use it, and people come from all over the place to use it. It's a long, complicated story. I won't bore you with it, but Southwark Council had a lease from Dulwich Estates, and the lease expired 31st of March. And ever since then, Dulwich Estates have locked us out. They've locked Southwark Council out. They've locked bikers out. A lot of people have got their bikes in there in containers, and they can't get their bikes anymore. Dulwich Estates sort of put a glimmer of light out. They appointed a contractor to run the place recently. None of us know who that contractor is yet, but there's been some high-level negotiations with Val Shawcross and the GLA and Graham Geddes.
You can't give us an inside view on what's happening in those negotiations with the GLA?
There's two different versions. One is that Dulwich Estates really do want it to reopen as a bike track because the local residents won't put up with the Sainsbury's, etc., etc. So it's quite a good use of that lovely piece of land, and there's some good green space around it too. The other version is that Dulwich Estates play very hardball indeed and just stalling for time, so that support will just wither away. They've almost certainly appointed somebody like Cannons to run the place, the gym people, and a very, very, very expensive gym would go down very well in that part of London, I am sure. But that would probably exclude the bikes, and that would be a real, real shame.
So the velodrome really is at risk, you think?
Yes, it is. And meanwhile, the infrastructure, which wasn't too good anyway, the showers and the loos and the cafe and the bar and all that, are in sore need of replacement, but the water's getting in, the pigeons are getting in, so the place is slowly rotting. The track surface is good. That doesn't need much maintenance until we start using it again. It just needs good clean. But all the outbuildings are decaying fast. And it's a real shame to see it withering away. A lot of us are doing a lot of work. Join the Friends of Herne Hill Velodrome for updates. You'll find it on the web easily, Herne Hill Velodrome.
So that's the place to go down to a velodrome. What are the other velodromes in the UK? There's one up at Manchester, isn't there? Is that an outdoor one?
No, there's a big, very well-run, very expensive velodrome in Manchester, which is Olympic standard, and that's very tight. It's about 120 metres long, I think, with very, very tight curves, and you have to be almost semi-pro to use it, although a lot of the amateurs out there are semi-pro. The good thing about Herne Hill Velodrome is it's about 400 metres long and it's outdoors, and even kids can use it because the bends aren't very tight bends. You've got the very tight banking, and you know it takes a couple of goes before you're used to getting up on the banking, but it's a really excellent starter velodrome. And of course, you know, it's a trainer for the Olympics too, but they're building a new one for the Olympics up in the Lee Valley somewhere.
Yeah, well, this might be one of those issues where the Olympics is actually causing a problem for other parts of London who get funding taken away from them because it's going to be up in the East End. Do you think there's that kind of dynamic going on?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's causing planning blight for all sorts of sports facilities over the rest of London. I think funds are being sucked into that area, and presumably there are huge contingencies up there as well about overspends and that sort of thing. So although at first you think, well, the Olympics will be good for the velodrome, I'm starting to doubt that now.
Well, this goes out. This is a piece of music that goes out to all fixed wheel bike riders, and particularly those from Japan.
Run your double walk.
Barry, besides beautiful fixed-wheel Mercian bikes harking back to the 1970s, was there anything else that caught your eye at Bikefest yesterday?
I don't want to be unkind about Bikefest. I met an awful lot of people I knew. There's a lot of London bike culture there. Those two fixed wheel bikes were perhaps the best thing I saw. There's a lot of stands. There was a very cheap folding bike that we were talking about earlier, made in China, £160. I'd like to try that. As we were saying, they're good, but I don't know how long they'll last. I found the problem with Bikefest really was it felt very municipal, lots of little tents, lots of leaflets, lots of organisations that I didn't really realise were associated with cycling. There was wonderful LCC there, of course, there was CTC, there was Sustrans, there's all the usual suspects, and they were doing their good stuff. But I just thought it looked a bit mean, a bit poor, and a bit tawdry. Lots of people queuing for Dr. Bike, which was good, and I wonder whether that made people think cycling was too complicated to even try. There wasn't enough about getting people on bikes.
There was that really good corner, but it was a bit hidden away, yeah, where you could go and try out lots of different bikes, because I remember last year that was right at the front, and that was a really fun thing to do. And but they only had one recumbent for an adult, because I think everybody wants to go along and try out a recumbent.
It was the tryout zone was much better last year. They used the area between Trafalgar Square and the National Gallery, that's of course now closed off to traffic. What a great thing that was. And they used the whole space last year much more, and it was much more open, much more democratic, and it was run by Bike Fix in Lambs Conduit Street, and they know their events. This time it was run by the Company of Cyclists, who are just as good, but they're quite different, much more form-filling. Everyone had to wear helmets. It all made it seem much more of a big deal, whereas last year it was a much more relaxed, fun tryout and much more visible. I didn't see the opera, which everyone says is good. I saw some breakdancing, I saw lots of other events. I really missed the half pipe from last year and the stunt bikes, because that added another dimension to cycling, and that encouraged kids to get on there. But I wonder what was achieved yesterday. It probably cost about at least £100,000, like last year did, and spreading that money around London a bit more thinly, I think, would have had more effort.
Well, it's good to have a flagship event, isn't it?
Yes,
or do you
is.
Think everybody, all the pictures in the newspapers was of the naked bike ride on Saturday?
Oh, the naked bike ride, that scooped up a lot of publicity, and good for them. I mean, they deserve it.
Well, they came on the show a couple of months ago.
Excellent,
and I wasn't able to get along because it was a bit cold and I was feeling really rather grim on Saturday. So
had I not been leading around myself that day, I'd have probably been there.
Okay, whatever excuse, we weren't
any
there.
Any excuse.
Okay, next year. Well, I'm going to go back in time a little bit to an interview I did in January with Jeremy Deller, who really caused a big flowering of publicity about cycling when he won the Turner Prize at the end of last year, because he dedicated his victory to everyone who cycles in London, because one of the works that he had in his Turner Prize show was a commemoration of a bicyclist who died on the Essex Road. And this is the interview that I did with him a few months ago.
Well, I think I've cycled now in London for about 10, 12 years, and I don't think I could go back to not cycling. And I just think it's just the freedom that it gives me just to get out and about. That's the thing that really excites me about being a cyclist. It's all the obvious stuff, really. Not having to get onto buses. That's one thing I really hate, is queuing for buses and things like that. And it's just knowing that you can be somewhere in 10 minutes rather than not knowing how long it's going to take. It's just more in control of your life.
And is there something about going under your own steam?
Yes, the health thing, I think. As the older I get, the more I appreciate that, I have to say. And getting a good sweat up.
And how about the actual kind of visceral experience of being on the bike, on the road, in the world?
I think there's two things. I mean, to be honest, I think it really sharpens your senses. I think I've got almost a sixth sense now about what it's like to be on the road. Especially, I drive as well. I'm not sort of an obsessive cycler, but when I drive, I feel like I kind of know a bit more about how to handle the road because of how I've cycled. But I do love that element, that visceral element, like you say, just like racing around. And
tell me about the work that you did relating to the death of James Foster.
Well, that was a piece that I made because a friend of mine had been killed 2 or 3 years ago. Or someone I knew, I should say an acquaintance, really. And I was doing a piece of work for the Tate for the Turner Prize, of memorials to people around the country or to events, things that had happened. Not just people had been killed, but things, important events, as well as deaths. And I really wanted to do something for a cyclist because of I'm a cyclist, and it seemed natural for me to commemorate that, and also because of what it's like to cycle in London, you know, the everyday dangers that you face, and then the fact that it's something that happens every day, and these people are usually anonymous, they're not well known, some of the other things that I did memorials to are people who are quite well known, or events that are quite well known, but as cyclists, you know, you'll get killed, and no one knows, apart from when flowers are put up, and then they, after a year, they stop being put up, that's it. It's kind of neutralised that space, so there's no reminder about something that had happened. So I really wanted to do something to a cyclist who had been killed in London fairly recently. My friend, or like I said, the acquaintance I knew, I asked her family, and they were a little uneasy about it. So I approached James's family, and so I just went about trying to work out what was suitable, really. And I know there's a plaque for him outside the shop where he used to work. So I didn't want to do something with words on, because that was already, he was already commemorated. So I just had these black silhouettes of bicycles made, and that was just put up on a lamppost nearby. So very simple, really. I mean, in some terms, I see it similar to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It's slightly anonymous in that respect. So it's the unknown cyclist.
And is it still there?
I don't know. We could go and see.
Yeah, well, we could go and go find out.
Why don't we go and see? Because it was there about 2 months ago.
What we'll do is we'll go down, we'll do a right here, and then we'll go down Upper Street. How's that sound?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
What's this? Highbury Fields.
These are very posh houses. I think Dido lives in one of them.
Do you think she has a bike?
I doubt it.
Do you think it would spoil her hair?
Should have, well... Yeah.
She's that kind of woman who takes care of her her quiff.
Yes, sort of expensively. But no, I doubt if she does. But strangely enough, I live on the Holloway Road. But around the corner from me is a very nice street. And Boris Johnson lives there. And I see him on his bike a lot.
Yeah, I've seen him on a bike.
The last time I saw him on the bike, he was on the mobile phone. And he was sort of going with his foot on the pavement to propel himself, because he was on the mobile phone having
kind of hoofing along.
Yeah, basically. And I looked at him and then just laughed out loud. So I just thought, who is this oaf on the bike?
You realise it's the editor of The Spectator and the Conservative Member of Parliament for Henley.
Yes, and then he saw me, made eye contact, and I think he sort of knows who I am because I see him like once a week, just wandering down the street or jogging. And we had a little race. One of those unspoken things was actually probably a kind of a macho little race. I think he wanted to show me that he, you know, he can cycle quickly when he is on the mobile. But I think it must be illegal to be on a mobile phone now on a bike.
Yeah, I think it's probably slightly more illegal than conducting an interview while going along.
So this is a roundabout.
Oh, is this Highbury Corner?
Yes. Critical mass I went on was from, or saw, I didn't even go on it, it just blew me away. This cabbie got out and tried to like thump someone, or it might have just been a motorist, I can't remember now, but it was incredible because all the cyclists just surrounded him and picked their bikes up and just brandished them, like holding them up above their heads.
It can get a bit leery. It's like you feel like a lot of people spend their whole lives as the victim,
yeah,
and suddenly they can victimize somebody else and they take great pleasure in doing it.
No, they do, but it's amazing just holding your bike above your head. I just thought, wow, that's such a strong image. That's an amazing image. I couldn't do it with my bike, it's so heavy, it'd be really pathetic if I tried to do that. But I was impressed, I have to say, because I think as cyclists you're incredibly vulnerable as one, but when there's 100 of you, It's just a totally different world.
And the street sounds just so quiet, don't they?
It's amazing. But it is. I mean, it is quite amazing that that's all it takes to have no sound in a street. It takes like 100 yards or so of cyclists. I mean, there's nothing around. You know, that's cushions you.
It's real traffic calming.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it is very zen once you start. Whenever I've gone on those things, initially I get quite nervous that something's going to happen. And we're all going to get arrested. And I'm the kind of person that does that. I kind of worry. But it's still up. I can see it from here. But once you get into it, it's just so calming. It's just fantastic. So as we get... Can you see it?
Right, yes, on the lamppost.
Yeah.
Here. Okay. Well, that's pretty high up, isn't it? That's
yes.
Good.
No, we had to put it high up. That's why I had Steve Allen, who's a friend of James's, did that. And he's a big lad. So we brought a set of steps along and did it.
All right, so yeah, it's a sort of chunky silhouette of a bicycle, about... Is that about 10 inches by 6 inches?
Yeah, about that.
And
black plastic.
Up on the... held on with a couple of Jubilee clips, the
yes.
cyclist's friend.
Exactly,
for
exactly.
Emergency repairs.
Yes. It was very simply done and really very quickly done, put up there. And I'm glad it's still there. I'm amazed, really.
Well, that was Jeremy Deller, and this is The Bike Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. Barry Mason, you're head of Southwark Cyclists. You did a lot of work with Jeremy on his Turner Prize show, didn't you?
That's right, yeah. We got an email from Jeremy just into the info at Southwark Cyclists email site. Or must have been about end of last August, I should think, saying would we be interested in helping him with his show at the Tate? And we just bounced straight back and said, of course, just jumped in not knowing what on earth it was about.
And what did you do?
We asked for volunteers, and about, I think, a dozen of us took turns, Matt staffing, like a big information table in the middle of the gallery, and we covered it in rough guides and maps and Southwark Cyclist leaflets and our new little flash business cards. And I think we put about 100 person days into it in all. So we staffed it most Saturdays and Sundays for probably 6 or 7 weeks running last autumn, and it was great. I mean, we just stood there in the Tate, we worked with the Tate curators, they didn't interfere at all unless we took up too much of the table.
But I mean, that was part of the idea of his show, wasn't
yeah.
it? It was to have people
absolutely.
Who were involved yeah. in yeah. things talking about the things that they're involved in that they care about, and depending on whether it was mine work or former mine workers or cyclists or other kinds of people that he was doing work about.
We met the Quakers. We didn't meet the miner because he only came down once or twice, and that was during the week because he couldn't do weekends. And we met the bat people as well, because his part of the thing was this wonderful video of millions of bats streaming out of this cave in Texas. So it's a really eclectic bunch of people. And the visits to the Tate were great because we probably spoke to hundreds of... Well, we know we did because we counted the leaflets we gave out. We spoke to hundreds of people every single day, and a lot of interest. And he won the prize, which was fantastic because
yeah,
we helped him.
Yeah, and the work is continuing, isn't it? You were telling me about a new T-shirt that's coming out that you're producing.
Yeah, by way of a favour, we said to him, look, you know, we didn't get any money for this, obviously, and he didn't want to pay us, et cetera, et cetera. We just did it because it was fun and it was useful and it pushed the cause forward and everyone had a blast doing it. And we said, do you mind designing a T-shirt? And he said, yeah, I'm not a graphic artist, but he's now produced a T-shirt. And we launch it on Wednesday morning at the Globe.
And so it's got that image of the person brandishing a bicycle above their head.
Yeah, it's dead simple. It's a scarlet T-shirt.
That he was talking about
exactly,
on our ride.
Exactly. It's got a sort of pictogram, one of those modern, almost sort of loo signs, a male, female loo sign, brandishing a bike above their head. Very sort of critical mass, very sort of power to the cyclist image. Dead simple image. With his signature on the side and some other stuff. Just
and,
a beautiful...
And when are you going to be launching it?
On Wednesday morning at the Globe.
And that's open to everyone to come along?
Yeah, Globe Theatre Bankside. We're doing our Bike Week breakfast there from... the doors open at 7, and we've got to kick everyone out at 9 because they're filming something. And the Globe are laying on breakfast, which we have to pay for. And there's Dr. Bike there, and there's some speeches, inevitably. But it'll be a fantastic gathering. And at 8:20, we meet on the terraces of the theatre, with inside what they call the groundling gates on Bankside. And then at 8:20, they throw the doors open, and we'll all stream in with our bikes into that auditorium, the famous auditorium at the Globe, and that'll for a photo opportunity, and that'll be unique. You know, I'm hoping there'll be 300 or 400 cyclists there with their bikes in the Globe, and that'll be a really lovely picture.
Well, Jeremy Deller's exhibition on folk art is on at the Barbican. It's free, and I think it's on for another at least a month or so, isn't it?
It's on for another 6 weeks or 2 months. It's in the Curve Gallery, which is free, and I do recommend it. It's full of really quirky stuff.
It could be something out of a Jeremy Deller piece of work, but in fact, it's the soundtrack to Claude Lelouch's film Pour un Maillot Jaune. And although this is a Bike Week special edition of the Bike Show, it would be absolutely wrong to be having a show at this time of year without having a look at the greatest bike event on the planet, which is, of course, the Tour de France. Pretty historic Tour de France, because it's said to be Lance Armstrong's final race, and he's going for his seventh consecutive win, which would really put him up, you know, above everybody else in terms of the history of the Tour. Do you think he's going to get it, Barry?
Yes, I do. I'm sure he will. If there's any certainty about these things.
He's just put in so much disciplined training, and he's just so focused on it, and he's got such a great team, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are some new... I mean, it's not the US Postal Service team anymore. It's called the Discovery Channel, and they've got some new riders in. But I think the way that the team works is just about Lance. And so I think anybody else who's going to have a go at taking him on is going to really have their work cut out. But the racing and watching the race is only really one of the aspects of the Tour de France. There's all the sound, there's the colour, there's the caravan publicitaire, there's being out in France, there's experiencing the French things. I mean, Barry, you've been out to watch it, haven't you?
Yeah, and I stumbled for a second because I couldn't remember what his new team was called. But I went out to see the three Alpine stages. Coincidentally, he won all three, first man ever to do that. And I'll never forget seeing US Postal. We were up on some mountain somewhere, and the whole thing, there's this huge sort of hours and hours build up, and we cycled up to the top, which is great because there's this huge gridlock of vehicles, and you just get your bike out and cycle up to wherever you want, and that's fantastic. And then the build, and then the caravan comes through and all the noise, and then US Postal, all six of them in their blue immaculate uniforms, I think that's the word actually, because it is very military, all came zooming around, and I've never been close to such power in my life. And you just think, this team is, it's so dominant. It was amazing. You just felt that power.
Oh.
Well, the year before last, I went out to watch the Alpe d'Huez hill stage, and last year they actually ran the time trial up the Alpe d'Huez, and there were said to be a million people on the side of, was it 21 kilometres? Or
yep.
Was it 21 hairpins? I can't remember.
Thereabouts.
I mean, it's an amazing spectacle. Why do you think the French get so into it? And why can't that sort of passion for cycling happen over here? Or do you think it will happen over here if we get the tour in 2007?
I think we certainly will get the tour. We'll talk about it later. I'm sure we'll get the tour. There's that pens the Olympic decision because there's politics involved. The French, I think it's cycling is much more, I hate to say it, male-based. It's much more village-based. It's what a lot of blokes, many more blokes, leave their families and go out and they put on all the gear, put on the little village uniforms and all go out cycling on
so
a Saturday.
So it's the French equivalent of fishing, is it?
It's the French equivalent of fishing or going to Sainsbury's or Tesco's or shopping.
So or B&Q.
Yeah, once we can
get
stop
away
people,
from the wine.
Once we can get people away from the shopping thing and sort of go continental, actually do something useful on Saturdays, then I think cycling will take off in this country. But there's a huge amount of work to do. The French cycling is very different. The Dutch cycling is different. The German cycling is so, so different to the American cycling, which is just full on what you don't do when you're in the gym. English cycling is different, but I think we'll get there sooner or later. But there's very different cultural basis for all those things.
But there's a lot of passion. I mean, any kind of tour or Tour de Britain or Tour de France stages coming to Britain would be immensely well received, I think, as long as we could get the technical organisation side of it. I think the people will be out on the streets. I think what I worry about from last year's Tour of Britain was the kind of traffic chaos when they ran the race through the middle of Manchester and they didn't stop the traffic. And so there were kind of lorries pulling out into the path of the peloton. It was madness.
That's just a no-no. But I'm sure that when the Tour de France comes, I think it's a when, not an if, that the spectators will be out there. And I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think there's a stage from London to Canterbury mooted. You'll get a million spectators on that quite easily. But they've got to sort the traffic out. You cannot mix, even if there's coned off contraflows. You've got to close the roads. There's no ifs, there's no buts. And the Tour de France probably won't. That'll be one of their conditions. You've got to close the roads. And people accept that. And you will get a million out, I'm positive.
Well, if they come to southern England, I'm really hoping that they'll put Ditchling Beacon on the route, because that is one of the great icons of cycling, because so many people have done the London to Brighton. It's the biggest charity ride. It's been going for, I don't know how many years, 20, 30 years?
Probably 30, I'm not sure.
And it is a great hill. Lots of people have done it. And to see, you know, the great riders of the world going up it would be fantastic. And on Christmas Day, in fact, last year, I rode up Ditchling Beacon on a little 20, 30-mile tour with cyclist, writer and filmmaker Nicky Hamlin.
Well, we're here on the Sussex equivalent of the Alpe d'Huez. Low gears engaged. See, Nicky's on a double chain ring, so he's got no granny wheel to winch him up at the end.
I haven't ridden up here for actually several years now, so, but I've been riding up hills in Italy a bit, so hopefully I'll be okay.
Well, they say one of the reasons that Lance Armstrong is so invincible is that he studies the climbs absolutely meticulously in the off-season, so he knows every bend, every change in gradient,
yeah,
every time he's going to change his gear, and he's got that mental edge,
yeah,
on the people who don't know the road so well.
I think to actually make a thing of going out and doing it, I mean, what riders often do is if there's a time trial stage up a hill and they get there the day before, they'll ride up it on that day to get some idea of what they're in for, but Lance Armstrong's taken it a lot further than that. Made it into a science, really, but I think his kind of cold-blooded focusing on the Tour de France, there's, it's, in a way it's a shame because it doesn't have the romance of the and the unexpectedness of previous years where suddenly someone will just shine in the mountains or take the odd stage like Robert Miller used to do, just kind of really come into their own on the mountains, or Sean Kelly, who used to ride, instead of planning his whole season around the Tour de France, he'd ride a lot of classic races in the spring as well. So he was considered to be more of a sportsman in a way.
Let this car pass.
And he was a great all-rounder. He's a big, heavy guy who was started off as a sprinter and realised that he wasn't going to get anywhere. If he wanted to really do well in the Tour de France, he'd have to become an all-rounder. So he changed his training schedule and became an all-rounder.
Oh, we're experiencing a lot of traffic here.
Yeah, much more than I expected.
This is Resonance FM, it's the bike show, coming to you from Ditchling Beacon in East Sussex, one of the great climbs of cycling in the south of England. Alright, so the view's starting to open up a bit. I'm sensing only a couple more turns. We've got some sky now, we're out of the woods. Sunshine. Beautiful. Of four-wheel drive. Oh, a lot of cars up here. And here comes the bon ruler himself, Nicky Hamlin.
That was very hard. Very hard. First time I've ridden up there for several years, actually. I thought I was fit. I've done a lot of riding over the summer, but it's very difficult. It's always hard. I suppose it's as hard as you make it, really. When you see the horse warning sign, you know you're near the top. Your heart lifts.
Oh, it's worth it for the view, eh?
The view's fantastic, and as you can see, there are a lot of walkers out here. I mean, the view really makes it wonderful, a wonderful walk too. You can walk back to Lewes from here in about an hour, so it's a lovely walk. But I don't think I'll be doing any more climbs up here today anyway. But after that...